Questioning Paul Chapter 2 Part 10.
While it isn't currently apparent, we have been given another clue into the nature of what would become known as Pauline doctrine. This time it comes through the forced inclusion of pistis, which I've translated faith. Etymologically, the word originally conveyed the exemplary concepts of trust and reliance. But that was before Paul made pistis so central to his religion that faith became synonymous with Christianity. Therefore, by alleging that his admirers equated his evangelizo, beneficial message, to pistis, faith, Paul was setting the table for his treatise. Pistis was awkwardly tossed into the mouths of others because Paul's entire edifice will be based upon faith. It will become his alternative to the tola. No matter how we render anemoton, in me for thee, God, there is no way to incorporate doxazo, praising and glorifying, without gagging on the result. Paul has either imagined groupies who are now worshipping him, or the called out from Syria to Cilicia were collectively suffering from the Stockholm syndrome. Keeping in mind that the scenario Shaul has laid out, whereby the religion of Judaism, in concert with the instructions of its chief priests, recruited and then ordered Shaul to bludgeon Torah-observant Jews, is a charade, still, at least, based upon what Shaul has said about himself, it is entirely possible, perhaps probable, that the founder of the Christian faith was ruthless. But should this be the case, it means that we are dealing with a delusional and amoral psychopath. Nonetheless, to the extent that Shaul told the truth, and that he was exceptionally and uniquely vicious, in concert with his repetitive claims, then the victims of his wanton savagery may have misconstrued this apparent remission, albeit temporary, in his brutality as being praiseworthy. In such cases, victims often bond with their abuser. They see the merciless as merciful. So in this concluding sentence, we are witnessing a psychological phenomenon that profoundly alters an individual's ability to exercise good judgment regarding those who are abusing them 19 centuries before it was codified and explained. This was not the first time, nor would it be the last, that this strategy would be deployed for nefarious means. Islam, for example, would not exist without it. Muhammad expressly authorized Muslim men to berate, imprison, and beat their wives so long as they occasionally relented and showed some mercy, which was usually in the form of having their way with their bodies. And if that was not sufficient to exercise complete dominion over women, then they could murder them. Doxazo, which is being directed at Paul, was translated. They were praising and glorifying, attributing an exceptionally high value and status. It also conveys. They were considering illustrious and magnificent, holding the opinion of an especially high rank, supposing to honor, extol, celebrate, and dignify, Paul. Doxazo is from the base of doxa, which is to form a favorable opinion, and thus to hold someone in high esteem by taking into account their behavior and reputation. And since Paul's reputation, at least according to Paul, has been that of a libertine and terrorist, both of which in the sight of God's people would be considered reprehensible, should this declaration have occurred, the Stockholm syndrome provides the lone rational reason to deploy doxazo, glorified in the opinion of the beholder, in association with Paul. And since the praiseworthy connotations associated with doxazo are directed in me for God, Shaul's statement can be read that people thought highly of God in me, which is extraordinarily arrogant, placing Paul in the company of the Caesars, emperors, and pharaohs who claimed to be God or, at the very least, to represent him before man. This serves to establish Paul as co-savior and co-author, his personal contribution completing God's work. This is yet another way in which Paul sounds like Muhammad in the Quran. This sentence pushes the envelope, elevating Paul's opinion of himself well beyond anything which is appropriate. But the other options may be even worse, especially if we read this as saying for God and me, making Paul and his God one and the same. And if God is brought into the equation, and is seen as part of the arrogant evaluation, then Paul rises above his God in status. Each of these themes will play out again in Islam, where Allah and Muhammad speak with the same voice because Allah is Muhammad's alter ego, having demonically possessed him as he had Paul. And this similarity is germane to our evaluation of Paul because in Islam Allah is indistinguishable from Satan. They have the same personality, ambitions, attitude, and methods. In Islam, which means submission, Allah replaces Yahweh as God. In Christianity, the Lord replaces Yahweh as God. The result is the same. The King James Version crafted a bizarre ending that serves to exacerbate the problem.
But they had heard only that he which persecuted us in times past now preached the faith which once he destroyed, and they glorified God in me.
The Latin Vulgate, from which the inappropriate ending materialized, reads similarly.
For they had only heard that he, who formerly persecuted us, now evangelizes the faith which he once fought, and they glorify God in me.
While typically I'm critical of these translations when they diverge from the original text, both conclusions are reasonable adaptations of Paul's poorly worded statement. It is easy to construe this as if Paul was suggesting that he and his God were equally praiseworthy. And keep in mind, the path to this place was paved with the pronouncement that Paul cannot lie. In the context of religious deceptions, it's also important to recognize that the King James rendition of the beginning of this statement was errant because the Greek word for preach is keriso, not wandelizo, which means to convey a healing messenger or beneficial message. And since faith is the result of not knowing, how and why would it be preached? Faith is required when there is insufficient information to know and thus understand. That is why it is part and parcel to Pauline doctrine. Paul never presents sufficient information to grow beyond faith. This realization drives to the heart of the great Galatians debate. It is only out of a sense of duty, that of pulling weeds from the swamp that has become Christendom, that I continue to share the methodology of the New Living Translation.
All they knew was that people were saying, the one who used to persecute us is now preaching the very faith he tried to destroy. And they praised God because of me.
While this isn't what Paul wrote, if this is what he was intending to say, if this is what he believed, then we should pity him. Neither Noah nor Abraham made such a claim. We do not find these words on the lips of Moses, nor Daud, David. Not even Yahusha said this. Recapping the sixth Pauline stanza serves as a real eye-opener.
But now what I write to you, you must pay especially close attention in the presence of God, because I cannot lie. 1 verse 20. Thereafter, I came to the regions of Syria and also of Cilicia. 21. But I was not known and was disregarded. I was either ignored or ignorant, not recognized or understood. Personally by appearance as an individual by the called out of Yehudah in Christo, 1 verse 22, but then only they were constantly hearing that the one presently pursuing and persecuting, systematically, hastily, and intensely approaching, oppressing and harassing us at various times now he presently proclaims a healing message of faith which once or now at some specified period he was attacking and continues to annihilate, he was consistently ravaging and destroying and he is devastating and overthrowing. 23, and so they were praising and glorifying, attributing an exceptionally high value and status, considering illustrious and magnificent, holding the opinion of an especially high rank, thereby supposing to honor, extol, celebrate, dignify, and magnify in me for the God, Galatians 1 verse 24.
The most appropriate way to conclude this chapter is to provide a review of everything Paulus has written in his first chapter. It has been a rough ride to a place most wouldn't have even dared to imagine.
Paulus, an apostle or delegate, not separating men, not even by the means of man, but to the contrary and emphatically on behalf of Jesu Christi and God, Father of the one having roused and awakened him for public debate, raising him out of a dead corpse, 1 verse 1, and all the brothers with me to the called out of the Galatians, 1 verse 2, grace to you and peace from God, Father of us and Lord Jesu Christu, 1 verse 3, the one having produced and given himself on account of the sins and errors of us, so that somehow, through indefinite means, he might possibly gouge or tear out, pluck or uproot us from the past circumstances and old system which had been in place, which is disadvantageous and harmful, corrupt and worthless, malicious and malignant, extended downward from and in opposition to the desire and will, the inclination and intent of God and Father of us, 1 verse 4, to whom the assessment of the brilliant splendor, the opinion regarding the glorious radiance and appearance of the shining light, the characterization of a manifestation of God's reputation, by means of the old and the new systems, amen, let it be so, 1 verse 5, I marvel, am amazed and astonished, wondering and surprised that namely in this way quickly and in haste you change, desert, and depart, becoming disloyal apostates and traitors away from your calling in the name of grace to a different healing message and beneficial messenger, 1 verse 6, which does not exist differently, if not conditionally or hypothetically negated, because perhaps some are the ones stirring you up, confusing you, and also wanting and proposing to change and pervert the beneficial messenger and healing message of the Christ, 1 verse 7, but to the contrary, if we or a messenger out of heaven conveys a healing messenger or beneficial message to you which is approximate or contrary to, beyond, or positioned alongside what we delivered as a beneficial messenger and announced as a healing message to you, then a curse with a dreadful consequence exists. 1 verse 8, as we have said already, and even just now, immediately thereafter, repetitively, I say, if under the condition someone delivers a helpful messenger or communicates a useful message to you contrary or in opposition to, close or approximate to, even greater than that which you received, it shall be, in fact I command and want it to exist as, a curse with a dreadful consequence. 1 verse 9, for because currently and simultaneously, men I persuade, I presently, actively, and actually use words to win the favor of, seducing, misleading, coaxing, convincing, appeasing, and placating, or alternatively, the God, or by comparison and contrast, I seek and desire to please and accommodate humans. Yet nevertheless, if men, I was pleasing and accommodating, exciting the emotions of and lifting up a slave of Christ, certainly not was me, 1 verse 10, but nevertheless, I profess and reveal to you brothers of the beneficial message which having been communicated advantageously by and through myself, because it is not in accord with man, 1 verse 11, but neither because I by man associating myself with it, nor was I taught or instructed as a disciple, but to the contrary, by way of a revelation, an appearance serving to uncover and unveil Jesu Christ, 1 verse 12, for because indeed you heard of my wayward behavior in some time and place in the practice of Judaism, namely that because throughout, showing superiority, surpassing any measure of restraint, to an extraordinary degree, and better than anyone else, I was aggressively and intensely pursuing, persecuting, oppressing, and harassing the called out of God, and I was and am devastating her, continuing to undermine, overthrow, and annihilate her, 1 verse 13, and so I was and continue to progress, accomplishing a great deal, and I persist moving forward in the practice of Judaism, over and beyond many contemporaries among my race, excessively and overabundantly enthusiastic, zealous and excited, devoted and burning with passion, vehemently adhered to belong to the traditions and teachings handed down by my forefathers. 1 verse 14, but at a point in time when it pleased and was chosen enjoyable and better for God, the one having appointed me, setting me aside out of the womb of my mother, 1 verse 15, to reveal and disclose, uncovering and unveiling the Son of Him in order that I could announce the healing message among the races, immediately. I did not ask the advice of or consult with flesh or blood. 1 verse 16, I did not ascend into Jerusalem toward the goal of being with or against the apostles before me, but to the contrary I went away, withdrawing to Arabia, and returned again to Damascus. 1 verse 17, then later in the sequence of events, after 3 years' time, I ascended up to Jerusalem to visit and get acquainted with Cephas and remained against/with him 15 days. 1 verse 18, but other of the apostles, I did not see, I did not pay attention to, or concern myself with except Jacob, the brother of the Lord. 1 verse 19, but now what I write to you, you must pay especially close attention in the presence of God, because I cannot lie. 1 verse 20, thereafter, I came to the regions of Syria and also of Cilicia. 21, but I was not known and was disregarded, I was either ignored or ignorant, not recognized or understood, personally by appearance as an individual by the called out of Yehudah in Christo. 1 verse 22, but then only they were constantly hearing that the one presently pursuing and persecuting, systematically, hastily, and intensely approaching, oppressing and harassing us at various times, now he presently proclaims a healing message of faith which once or now at some specified period he was attacking and continues to annihilate. He was consistently ravaging and destroying, and he is devastating and overthrowing. 23, and so they were praising and glorifying, attributing an exceptionally high value and status, considering illustrious and magnificent, holding the opinion of an especially high rank, thereby supposing to honor, extol, celebrate, dignify, and magnify in me for the God. Galatians 1 verse 24.
It is spellbinding.
End of chapter 2.